Texas. Let's go.
This is a journey.
Would you join me, please, and welcome me?
Redeem a fool, I call it,
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
Amazing. I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Peace, peace, and welcome to The Collision, where sports and politics collide. I'm Etan Thomas. My co-hosts Dave and Chuck are not here today, so I am solo, and I have a great guest. So much respect for this brother. And we go way back. You know, I'll let y'all know a little bit. You know, he first reached out to me. You've heard us talk about a lot on the show when I, you know, spoke out when I was playing with the Wizards against the war in Iraq. And after that happened, this brother reached out to me. I didn't know him from there. He didn't know me, but he just reached out to me just as a brother reaching out to another brother. And he was like, you know, hey, you probably have no idea what you just did do you? And I was like, no, you know, what you mean? And, you know, he was just, all right. He's like, let me tell you, you don't have to be everything to everybody. There's going to be a lot of people that are upset about what you just said. It was a beautiful speech, everything like that. And I really always appreciated that. So now, these many years later, you know, I'm watching him. He's a human and civil rights activist. He's authored 16 books, Grammy-nominated poet, Newsweek magazine contributing writer, SiriusXM commentator, and guest host. And he has a new film that he is the director, co-writer, co-producer of called When We Free the World. Amazing new film. We're going to talk all about that. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Kevin Powell. How are you doing, sir? Oh, you're on mute, though. You got to go off mute.
Okay, I'm ready. I really am.
It's all good. Okay. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Thomas. It's great to see you, brother. And as I said, thank you for your post on social media. And thank you for your beautiful family, your wife and your daughter and your son, man. Just shout out to all of y'all. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Appreciate it. Yeah, you got, you know, got two daughters and one son, three kids, and they keep me busy. That's all.
That's great. That's right.
Yeah,
oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
My bad.
Two of them are in high school now. You know, one's a freshman, one's a senior, and then, you know, Malcolm's in college. They grow up quick. It happens quick.
Yes.
Blink of an eye, and they, you know what I mean?
Wow,
I want to go right, because I want to really take a deep dive into this documentary, and I have the trailer. So it was okay with you. I want to play the trailer, and then we talk about it right there. Mike, could play this the trailer for When We Free the World?
It was a journey to move and trying to figure out, well, what does healthy manhood look like? And there's all these definitions about manhood. I had to question everything.
To ask that question, I have been asking since I was a little boy, what is a man?
Manhood is centered around your development as a human being.
Manhood is about a partnership between men.
There's power in building connections with other black men in the community.
I believe that mental health was really about going to see a therapist.
As black men, we don't talk about our pain.
Be strong. Be strong, young man. Be strong.
And we never hear words like, heal, young man, heal.
Just not having a father there made me realize I had to lean on other male figures.
I learned how to be a man by watching my father breathe.
When my father told me about manhood, he taught me through hip-hop.
Our job as fathers, as men, is to break that cycle of sickness.
I've learned a lot from my dad as a young man, and he's always taught me to always have courage and be who I am.
I'm inspired by just hearing my kids call me dad.
The world would want to know about black boys my age is that we can do anything.
Hope it's something that you have to fight for every day.
Yes, I hear my brother, the prolific hip-hop prophetic Kendrick Lamar, saying, all the life is messed up and jacked up. We gonna be all right. We gonna be all right.
Wow. That was a powerful trailer. Tell us all about how this started, how it came about, what made you want to write this, put this together for the world.
Don't laugh at me, but Beyonce's Lemonade.
Wait, what?
I said, don't laugh at Beyonce's Lemonade.
Really?
It was 10 years ago. And of course, you know, since I've known you, you know, we both have done a lot of work around black males and black male empowerment. So it wasn't Beyonce. But when I saw all the hype with black women around Beyonce's Lemonade 10 years ago, I was like, man, what is this? And what I remember the time I was watching it, and I was like, this, first of all, this is beautifully constructed. I love how she, and we're both poets. I love how she used poetry throughout, just not just the music. And I remember saying to myself, man, I'm going to do something like this for black men, you know, and boys. And my idea initially was just a music video, 5 minutes, and then it grew to 10 minutes. And then it became this feature length documentary, 6 years working on it through COVID, two Trump administrations, which has been insane, as you well know, you've talked about. And George Floyd and so many other things that have happened to black men over the last 6 years, but we got it done. And, you know, I wanted to do something different, brother. And I know you would appreciate this because you are a Renaissance man, which is why I have such great respect for you. You have so many gifts, you know, that you've presented to the world. But a lot of times we don't see black men as the whole human beings that we are, and black boys, you know this, and I know this. And so as we were going through mad documentaries about black males, we realized, like, you know, you're a former athlete. I'm a huge sports fan, as you know, like, you know, we have the great sports documentaries, you know, we have the great documentaries about brothers who are entertainers, you know, but then the third category we kept seeing was just us being the victims of racism, as if we don't have anything else to talk about. And so we were clear, we were not going to do a documentary that ignored the history. I mean, you know, y'all will see it. We talk about, you know, the colonization and enslavement. We talk about segregation. We certainly talk about the lynchings and denying us the right to vote and basic citizenship and all of that. We certainly highlight things like Emmett Till and George Floyd. But you also get 70 black male voices, 5 generations from teenagers to 90-something. You get brothers who are formerly incarcerated, plus 12 brothers who have doctor in front of names, PhDs. You definitely have brothers who are fathers like yourself, Brother Thomas. You know what I mean? Because, as you know, even though I didn't grow up with a father, you know, that narrative is that there's no black fathers there. Brother, one of the things that touches my heart the most when I see folks, social media posts and people like you, is your love of being a father and a husband. That's in our film, because a lot of times we don't see that in these documentaries. It's almost like black fathers, they know that there are no black fathers at all. Right. And so we're like, we're not going to present that narrative. So that's what the film is. It was a lot of work, brother, a lot of, you know, starting and stopping and fundraising. And I appreciate all the folks, you know, yourself included, who've been supportive. But we wanted to also make an independent film in the spirit of Melvin Van Peebles, Spike Lee, when he first started out, where we had, you know, no one was telling us what to do and how to do it. Because we had some people who suggest stuff to us that was, you can imagine.
Yeah, I already know.
But it's a love letter to black men. It's a love letter to black males, man. And it's not just a film. We created a study guide that'll be released next year for ages 10 to adults. And there's also a website that'll go live next year, whenwefreetheworld.org, because we wanted to create a clearinghouse of information, resources, and services for black males. And we intentionally took this year, we've been touring a film around the country. We got to get to the DMV. People have been asking us about the DMV. We will, I promise that. But it's really been to create these conversations. As you said, the recurring theme throughout is what you, Brother Thomas, you've been doing since I've met you. You talk, you express yourself as an artist, as a poet, as a writer, as an author of books, as a media personality. You know, when you were, you know, one of the things that struck me about, you know, your career is that you were the person that people came to talk with, you know what I mean? And I think that one of the things I realized working on this film, that so many Black men, just like men in general, think that we shouldn't share what we're feeling, what we're going through. And we carry so much stuff around. And you know what happens to us when we don't talk about it? It implodes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Talk about the healing part, because this is one thing that, you know, in circles, you know, sometimes Black men are not allowed to be vulnerable, you know, not allowed to express pain or express, you know, sadness or heartache. You know what I mean? It's just received differently. We've always had to be the strong, you know, put up the front, you know, everything is okay, we're going to work it all out. Talk about that aspect of the healing part.
Woo. Well, we go there in the film. I don't want to give away all of the film, but we have brothers who have suffered from all forms of violence, for example, including some brothers who are survivors of childhood sexual assault. You know, a lot of times we hear about the girls, but there's boys out there, straight boys out there who have dealt with it well. We talk about that. We have brothers who, you know, talk about the importance of you know, hugs and you know, one brother talks about healing. We have brothers who are therapists in the film, you know, talking about, you know, we can't just bottle this stuff up. You know, we've been told don't cry, toughen up, etc. I mean, when I think about the incredible world of sports, because I think sports is such an important metaphor for all of us who are men who love sports. I mean, I know it's part of my education, my journey. I appreciate people like Dak Prescott, say, for example, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, and other athletes that we've had who've talked about mental health. We talk about that a lot in the film, Brother Thomas. Like, you know, we've got to work on it, but you can't heal if you're not willing to talk about what hurt you. Like for me, example, you know, not growing up with a father, there was a fatherhood hole there. I had to confront that. You know what I mean? I had to confront, you know, the challenges that my mother faced trying to raise a boy child and how she took out some of the stuff on me because she was angry at my father. Those are real things that I had to unpack through the years, through my writing, as you know, through therapy, which I've been very honest about. And I think what my wife has said is, I have to shout my wife out because she co-produced and co-wrote this film with me, Evangeline Lawson, that there would be no film without her and her deep love for Black men. I need to say that. That's really important, that, you know, she's one of many sisters who love Black men. But, like, you know, we have to create safe spaces and non-judgmental spaces for Black males. That's what you're talking about, and that's how the healing work begins. But if we're going to come in there and just say, you know what, this and that about Black men, we're just going to be like, all right, I'm good, and we're not going to talk. That's what it is. You know what I'm saying?
100%. You know, I want to play this clip that we have. If you know the NBA player Michael Beasley,
of course.
So he had a segment, and this is a little bit old. I think this was maybe about 2 years ago, but it always hit me hard when I saw it. And he was on The Pivot with Ryan Clark and a whole crew. I want to, Mike, let's play that, and then we'll go and speak about it. You know, but play this in its entirety. It's a really deep clip, but it goes right with what we're talking about here with your documentary. So let's go to that clip.
You say the only people in your life who haven't stolen from you are your kids. Now that you are an adult, now that at least right now you're out of basketball, are you searching out other people to build adult relationships with? Or are you so, or has everything that's happened in your life been so difficult?
You want me to be real with you?
Yeah.
I don't leave the house. I play basketball and I go home. I don't care what y'all do no more. Like, all I care about is playing basketball all day. I go home and I try to talk to my kids as much as I can. I don't see them as much as I can because I'm not traveling as much no more. I don't know what to expect when I leave this house no more. You know what I'm saying? I don't talk to nobody. You know what I'm saying? I've reached out and I've reached out and I've reached out and I've reached out and I've reached out so more that I gotta die with some kind of dignity.
B, that's not sustainable. Like, you too young, bro. That's not sustainable, bro. You can still play ball. So that's not sustainable.
So I can come up here and I can tell you somebody else's life and I'm willing to do it. Hold on, I'm gonna turn my head backward. I'm gonna put a smile on for you and I'm gonna, like, bro, I'm gonna.
You don't gotta put nothing on for me.
Or I can just sit back and I'm gonna tell you what it is. Yeah. Like, I'm not, I know that's not sustainable, but at the same time, like, what?
Please, none of us can do it alone, bro.
Reach out because
go out, go out with.
Go out, talk to people, interact with people. Like, bro, real talk. I'll call us out, us three. Bro, you be in Miami?
Yeah, y'all party. I don't party, bro.
No. We don't party, bro. I'm talking about you have kids, I have kids. Come to my house. We can get bounce houses for the kids. We can sit back on the porch, drink a couple beers, drink some wine, hang out. Like, bro, that's not a normal, successful man's life to sit up in the house like that. Like, you got to find good people. And us three can be good people. You know what I'm saying? Like, bro, it's not, that's not sustainable,
no disrespect to what y'all got going on. I've been trying to find good people for so long. I'm tired, bro.
You know, I would say I'm this. It's a 100%, bro. Like, it's so okay to be tired,
like,
though.
I got... You know what I'm saying?
You ain't got nothing left. You ain't got nothing left to give
people. I'll tell you this, bro. I'll be it. Like, whatever you need, dog. Like, if you just want to talk. Like, I for sure can't hoop with you. I'll go out there and pass that hole. Like, what we're saying is, bro, like, we want to be those people. Bringing you here wasn't about this. I wanted to talk basketball and hoops. But, dog, folks love you, dog. Nobody want to see you go through this.
I got me a Beasley jersey at the motherfucking house. Because I was down here when he got drafted.
I think the thing is, man, like, so many times, as black men, we are asked because of talent to carry everybody. We are not made to carry everybody. Black women are asked to carry everybody. They are not made to carry everybody. Dog, it takes a fucking village, bro. And at some point, you gotta have somebody who don't need shit from you, who don't want shit from you, who wanna see you win, man. Like, we don't do this shit for us. Yeah, like you want to build these things, but it's about these conversations. It's about bringing people on here and letting them tell their story. When Freddie said, man, you could tell your narrative, tell that shit and I'll preach it too. What we saying is, man, don't give up and we won't give up.
I can't say I know exactly what you're going through, but I've seen a lot of, I've heard a lot of stories and I've seen a lot of guys that have come from our demographic and our background, they really, you know, they fight and bust their ass.
Everybody just sit there and laugh. Like Antoine Walker go through the whatever he go through. Motherfuckers just sit there and make jokes. Allen Iverson was a fucking joke for a while until everybody found out that shit wasn't true. He turned, it's like, bro, like, no, bro, being black is so fake right now. It's like, motherfucker, only care when it's time for somebody to die and the cameras to show. It's like, bro, motherfuckers is out here showing every f-ing day that they need help. It's in the f-ing music and we only listen to it till these f-ing die. It's like, bro, everybody out here need f-ing help and everybody walking around this motherfucker like they got it all f-ing together.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap in it.
That
was deep. That was deep. And every time I see it, it hits me. That's like about 2 years old. And when you see the visual of him, Michael Beasley is in tears. Like, he is a, you know, here around the DMV, it was, people remember how nice he was. It was him. He was better than KD. You know what I mean? At the time, they played on the same AAU team. And so him being vulnerable like that, that's not a space that, you know, you heard the pain in his voice. He talked about how people laugh at people when they're vulnerable. People, like, all those things. And it seems like this is exactly what you're tackling in your film.
Man, I'm trying not to get emotional here, brother. But that, I remember that, and it's painful to hear it again. I mean, my first question, if you happen to know Mr. Thomas, is he okay? These 2 years later, do you know where he is by any chance? Is he okay, Michael Beasley?
He's playing ball. He's playing in Ice Cube's Big Three.
Okay, that's right. That's right.
Playing, when you see him playing, and I'm connected with him, you know, he's liked a few of my things. We've messaged each other a little bit. And when you see him playing, you see him exploding with emotion. Like, it's like over-the-top emotion while he's playing. Just look back at it in the Big Three. That was just this summer.
And, that's right.
And there's so much inside of him. You know what I mean? Pain. Like some of the things that he said, you know, his family members, like, that have done him wrong, and his friends, and his, he talked about his like close family, like his parents, like not like cousins and, you know what I mean, uncles. He talked about like his mama. Like it's heartbreaking to hear, but so many people have that story, but suffer in silence.
Let me say this as an activist of God, a long time. You know, I used to think that if I just rail out against racism and other systems of oppression over time, as I started adding things to the conversation, that was enough. You know, I've been a part of every kind of protest, march, taking over buildings, you know, calling out this person, that person, this system, that system. Those things are necessary and all well and good. But the thing I realize now, brother, at this stage of my life, and because of all the things that I've gone through, very similar. Because, I mean, many Black men can identify with Brother Beasley. You know, no matter who you are, no matter what generation you're in, you feel like you're by yourself. You know, we as Black people, specifically for a second, and it's really this whole country, if we don't understand the importance of healing work, like very serious deep dive healing work, nothing is going to change. You know, this country has never healed because this country's never had real conversations, which is what you eloquently taught, you bring up in your social media posts. You're like, look at this. And why aren't we talking about that? Because we are a country that doesn't want to talk about anything. It doesn't matter if it's Jeffrey Epstein. It could be slavery. No matter what, we don't want to talk about it, which is why you keep seeing things, negative things happen over and over again. For us as Black people specifically, we know that Africa is the creative civilization. You and I know this because we are readers. We're students, you know, for life. We know that we were kidnapped, stolen from Africa, and that our people were brought to the West Indies. We were brought down south. We were brought to Latin America and various places. We also know that that did major damage to us spiritually, mentally, in every way possible. We also know that when physical slavery ended, be it down south in the West Indies, Brazil, there was no mass therapy session. There was no healing session for Black people. It was just like, all right. But then we had to deal with colonization if we're in the West Indies or Latin America, and segregation in this country. And when you start to think about it like that, it's literally the traumas, as we talk about. You know, when I've been going to therapy for 30 years, Brother Thomas, and only in the last 10 years or so have I even heard regularly words like trauma and healing and, you know, and triggers and things like that. But the reality is, you know, my mama passed things to me that she got from her granddaddy, and he got it from somewhere. And it was just passed along, you know, from generation to generation. And so when I'm hearing him speaking, I understand I'm an only child. I'm a Black man who was told not to cry, you know, that you have to be tough, that you have to man up. And I have felt just like him, like I've been on the island by myself. Forget the 16 books, forget MTV Vibe, Grammy nomination. All that stuff is irrelevant, because the reality is a lot of my life, I was damaged on the inside because of all the pain that I was carrying around. I mean, it was just 5 years ago, bro. I was going through a second bankruptcy, a divorce, etc. I'm just saying this honestly because you just shared this piece with me. And why did I do this film? I literally made this film in the midst of my own life falling apart yet again in my 50s, not my 30s like Michael Beasley. But the reality was, Kev, you keep dealing with all this external stuff. You keep dealing with your career and these accomplishments you're checking off. But how are you really doing? And that's the question we never ask Black men and Black boys, Mr. Thomas. How are you really doing? And then we get to a point where we're just exploding. And when you're describing, brother, as a poet that you are, how Brother Beasley plays basketball, you know what made me think of? The brothers in Earth, Wind & Fire, the clips of jazz musicians who are just banging, playing until they're dripping sweat. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because that becomes our outlet. Basketball is our outlet. Football is our outlet. Playing that instrument or singing or rapping or doing that poem is our outlet. And we need therapy as well as those outlets, is what I'm trying to say. You know what right. I mean? Right. Yeah.
That's the part where, you know, in our community, therapy has always been looked upon as, you know, there's been a negative connotation to it. That's just always been. I remember growing up with it. When you hear somebody in therapy, they're like, "Oh, what's wrong with you?" You know what I mean? Or something like that. And there's this fear. And I never really understood why it was like that in our community more so than other communities. You know what I mean? Why? And I don't know if you dealt with this. Yeah. Why is therapy such a negative thing in our community?
But let me bring it back to the film, When We Free the World. We've divided it into 9 chapters, and the first chapter is history. The last chapter is hope. And this is all intentional. The history chapter sets it up. One of the things one of the brothers says in the film is that we need to understand these things lie in our DNA. So on those plantations, brother, we couldn't talk about stuff. And I believe that a lot of us, that became internalized. And so don't talk about it, you know, and don't bring that up. Why, leave that alone. Don't, you know what I mean? Even when I was, early this year, I was in Newark, New Jersey, which there was part of that community that was harboring some of the folks who killed Malcolm X. I'm sitting there on a panel with these folks, and no one brought up the fact that, wait a minute, we're sitting in this community where some of the folks who pulled the trigger were black hands who were protected by a certain part of the community, and they lived in Newark, and they were actually celebrated as heroes at the end of their life. I brought it up. People looked at me like I was crazy. I'm like, yo, do you understand the I'm not with insanity. And what we need to understand what racism and this system has done is normalized insanity, and it also affects us. You know what I mean? It's not just the Epsteins and Trumps. It also is us. And I think we have to talk about stuff. And when I say therapy, it's not just me going to my therapist. Like, I'll be on my call with my therapist in a couple of days. But do you have a set of, like, I love those two brothers. I don't know who they were, Brother Tom, but that's your circle right there. When I was going through it 5 years ago, man, I had a couple of brothers. Woo, man. One brother said to me, Kev, you can go ahead and give up, but you're going to give a victory. You'll be another victory for racism as a black man if you just give up. Wow. That hit me so hard, bro. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what level of class you are. I've seen it with wealthy brothers. I've seen it with brothers who are poor. But the common thread is that we think that part of manhood is just not talking about stuff. And our film is, we got to redefine it. I'm a Christian, brother. And so I believe in my spiritual work. I go to a wonderful church in Harlem. But even my church, I go there because they have a mental health center as a part of the church, because the pastor's like, I'm not qualified to be a therapist, but we have people who are. And so my work is with y'all spiritually, and here's the work that y'all need to do mentally. That's the solution that we need to think about as black people.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. You know, I have a small circle of friends from high school. Z-Rock and Scooter. That's my circle. And yes, we talk about a lot of things together. Like, you know, like we was younger, we would get together, like, you know, after high school, we said, okay, we're always going to get together at least once a year at least, and go kick it. So we'd go, like, to Miami, we go to, you know what I mean, Memorial Day weekend stuff. But as we started getting older, you know, go to like Vegas, but we would really not even go to be kicking it. We'd sit around the pool and just talk. And like, just, you know, pour into each other, tell each other, hey, man, honestly, you did that wrong. You know what I mean? But if you can't tell that to your homeboy, then they're not really your homeboy. Like, if your homeboy just cheer everything that you do, you're great. Go ahead. That's wonderful. You know, no, you got to be honest, bro. That was a terrible decision that you just made.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, my wife calls it, brother, who are your accountability partners? You know what I mean? Like, my wife and I are each other's accountability partners, but I'm at a point now where I can't have male friends who are not also going to be honest with me, and I can be honest with them without them getting bent out of shape. It makes for a small circle, but it's important to have a circle, because I think one of the dangers, this is American men in general, because I've done a lot of research and studying around this as well. Most American men, our friends are just people we have from high school. If we were blessed to go to college like you and I did from college, and they said most American men don't really take on new friends after 25 or 30. You actually have to make a conscious effort to do that. Well, I met you after 25 or 30. I met Brother Dave Zirin after 25 or 30, because I actually value men. I'm not, you know, you're my peer. Dave is my peer. I'm not threatened by men. I don't define my manhood in terms of ego, competition. You know how we roll, brother. You're like, Kev, you know, if you ask me for something or you need advice about something, I'm like, I got you. Same thing with you and me. But a lot of us, we don't do that because we see it as like, you know, we're in competition with each other. You and I have seen it as poets. I'm saying you saw it as an athlete. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And I think that's part of the thing too. Like, you know, yeah, I have people, but I also know that I need to be able to talk. Like, me and Dave, man, me and you, we are able to say, yeah, you know, even if we don't talk for a while, we can reach out to each other because there's love and respect there as men. That's what we got to get to. That's what we need to broaden out, I believe. Because otherwise, what happens is the violence, brother. I mean, in my past lives, I was a drinker. You know, I was abusing my body back in the day, which is why I'm a vegan now. You know, I've been Brother Beasley, where I'm like, well, I'm just by myself. And, you know, you need community. You got to have some, even if it's just two people, you need something that you can, you need someone that's going to be there for you. That's important.
That's real powerful. Real quick, what church are you a member of in Harlem?
First Corinthian Baptist Church, brother, Pastor Michael Walren.
Yes, I've done a panel there before. I'm actually going to try to, you know, do something else there with him. I didn't know he was a member of that church.
We premiered the film. I love that church. But we premiered When We Free the World all the way back in January at that at the church, because, you know, he's just Brother Walren is a New Yorker. His family's from Barbados, man, and you know, and you know, he's a deep thinker. He's a Morehouse man. And you know, and I also look for people who, when we think about manhood, you know, men who think outside the box. I mean, that's why I reached out to you, brother, all those years ago, man. I was like, man, this is an out of the box thinker. You are in the tradition of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You're in the tradition of Bill Russell. You're in the tradition of Jim Brown. You're in the tradition of Ali. And it's like, because you're like, I'm not going to just be what you tell me to be. And that's what we're ultimately saying with the film too. Like, you know, it's like people who look at me like Kev is just hip hop. Like, nah, man, I actually love jazz music, man. I love all kinds of stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, yeah, but that's the American way to put you in a box. And then it's done particular damage to black males to think that all we can be is a certain couple of things. And, you know, man, listen, and I, you know, I almost said it. I said it to you. You're a Renaissance man, but I realized I was on a radio show earlier today, and the host said it to me. You're a Renaissance man, but I'm like, no. It's like a brother says in our film, Brother Thomas. You know, no, we just like to read and we like to think.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. We want to use we like to use our brains, the whole thing, like all of it.
All of it.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
Let me just say when you do decide to come to the DMV, you know, I have a lot of places of connections that I could say that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So let's definitely talk. And I want to, you know, support this as much as possible. This is so needed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for putting it together. Thank you for being vulnerable, because there's a lot of vulnerability that has to come with doing something like this. So thank you. Thank you for that. We're going to go to a break. I want to come back and talk about everything that's going on in Jamaica. Everybody knows and have heard about the horrible hurricane that happened, but they don't really know what's going on the grounds. So we're going to come back. Let's go to a quick break, and we'll have Ms. Adair, who I have a lot of respect for. And we'll come right back with more of The Collision with Sports and Politics Collide.
While I'm living, thanks I be giving. I'm a living while I'm living, to the Father I will pray. Only Him know how we get through every day. All the hike in the price, I'm a leg we have to pay. While our leaders play, all I see people are rip and a rob, all are grime. If never love is a thief with long bag. No love for the people who are suffering bad. Another toll to the poor, may God help his soul. What is to stop the youth from getting out of control? Full of for education, yet no own a payroll. The clothes from me back have countless eyes old. Could go on and on, the fool has never been told. I'm a living while I'm living, to the Father I will pray. Only Him know how we get through every day. With all the hike in the price, I'm a lady we have to pay. While our leaders play, we say who can afford to run will run. But what about those who can't? They will have to stay. Opportunity a scarce commodity. In this time I say, when mama spend her last, I send you go class. Never you ever play. It's a competitive world for low budget people, spending the time while earning.
And we're back on The Collision where sports and politics collide. And we have with us, I have so much respect for her and the work that she does, you know, for the culture, for the Caribbean, everything that's going on right now in Jamaica. And this is the thing. A lot of people here in the States don't really know exactly how bad it is in Jamaica since the hurricane. You know, they reported that the hurricane happened. They reported that a lot of different reggae artists were lending their voices. And so a lot of people are thinking, okay, well, they're all right. It's like, no, they're not all right. They need a lot of help. So, Ms. Dara, thank you. Welcome to the show. You're not a stranger to WPFW. And just talk to us. Talk to us about what many people here in the States do not know.
Well, I happened to be on the reggae cruise, actually, when Melissa hit Jamaica. And it was quite it really kind of affected the whole cruise environment. It was our 10th anniversary, but no one could really feel 100%, you know, happy because we were all, you know, not knowing what was going to happen in Jamaica. You know, Jamaica has had other horrible hurricanes. I remember back in, I think, 89, Hurricane Gilbert hit. And people, Jamaica is a very rural, we know about Kingston, we know about the North Coast and the tourist areas, but Jamaica is a very rural country. A lot of people build their own homes. The homes are not sturdy, stable. What happened, the most devastating thing, are the roofs. People do not have roofs over their heads. The roads were devastated. And I have, we weren't able to go to Jamaica for the cruise. We were redirected to Montego Bay, so I haven't been there, but I've spoken to friends on the ground. Now, the devastation is concentrated on the western part of the island. Kingston and the eastern part were hit, but not as severely. They were able to get electricity and lights, electricity and water within a few days, and things are kind of stabilized. But imagine these rural areas, these mountainous areas where people live miles from each other. The roads have been washed out. All of the shopping areas and stores have been devastated. You can definitely go online and view the devastation. It has been described as heartbreaking, gut-wrenching. I spoke to Muta Baruka last week, who went from Kingston to St. Elizabeth. You've heard that there's been great devastation in St. Elizabeth. It's called the breadbasket of Jamaica. It's where a lot of the agricultural work is done. I am a regular visitor to Treasure Beach, which is a fishing village. It has been devastated. They still do not have water, electricity, and I don't know if you can imagine. I mean, we've seen this type of devastation here, Katrina, and in many, in North Carolina and other places recently, and the fires. So we know these things are horrible, but in many cases, there's an infrastructure here that is stabilized that people can get to and work, and just imagine where there's no help. But the help has been amazing. Countries, individuals, people, everybody is contributing, sending planes in. As you mentioned, a lot of the prominent artists have been up front center, you know, Buju. Jose Andreas, again, was maybe one of the first outside agencies to get there, but other countries, other Caribbean countries are there. But Muta said, what Muta told me is it's going to take 5 years. So this is a long fight. It's now, and it's going to be for a sustained amount of time to get things back in place and stabilized. There have been over 45 deaths in Jamaica. And I also want to mention that there also was devastation to Haiti and Cuba. You don't hear about that on the news, and I do not know the details. But, you know, use your internet and look things up. And there are many, many ways to contribute locally, internationally, globally. You know, you have to be careful. There are scammers. There are people who will, at times like this, take advantage of folks' sympathy and set up false things. Check your resources. Check the agencies you think of giving to. There's, you know, UN agencies. There's global. There's nonprofit agencies everywhere here. There's been lots of efforts here, a lot of drop-off points. Of course, the Embassy of Jamaica is here, so they have organized relief processes, money, goods, etc. I also want to mention Susie Russell and her team, which includes Sarge from Image Band. They have had two highly successful fundraising events, one in D.C., one in Baltimore. In the past 2 weeks, they're actively collecting product and sending everything down to Jamaica with great enthusiasm. So this is not just a Caribbean community response, but a D.C. DMV response to the crisis in Jamaica. So there are many ways to help and support. I'm sure that relief efforts will be ongoing for quite a long time. And I want to thank everybody who has contributed or even considered, you know, any amount you can give is helping someone in Jamaica. I keep thinking of the song by the Mighty Diamonds, "I Need a Roof Over My Head." That's where people are. And that's the reality. People do not have a roof.
Say this. I had a terrible experience many years ago when Hurricane Ivan hit Grenada, and I did all of this fundraising, and I did it through and I went through UNICEF and then with Red Cross, And if there was social media back then, I would have been on social media like Buju, upset because it didn't go to where I want. They diverted the funds. So while I this happened in Grenada, and you know, we raised all this money, we did all this thing, and then there was another typhoon that hit someplace else. And so they diverted the funds to where they felt was the bigger need. And I was like, well, wait a minute, that's not what I raised the money for. Like, how could you just divert the funds? Like, but they, that's what the, it's in the fine print. They could do it into their discretion. Kevin, you posted a while ago some reputable places that people can donate to. And I looked at those and I, you know, thought about it when I saw Buju upset, you know, that whatever, you know, however it happened with him. And I've heard of, you know, different scammers that you mentioned, Ms. Dara. And, you know, how can people safely and confidently support Jamaica? You know what I mean? Well, how can you do it that way?
Well, I mean, first of all, just thank you, Mr. Dara, for all that you're doing. God and the ancestors bless you. I have been to Jamaica many, 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 many times, and definitely have been supporting here. And you touched my heart, because that is the common thread. But the folks who have had cell service, I need a roof. I need a roof. I need a roof. You know, I've been all over the country like you have, and you know, and the Caribbean is our people. Africa is our people. We need to take care of our people, period. And something that you were touching, you're talking about, Brother Tan, it's called disaster capitalism. It's intentional. You know what I mean? And, but let me go back a step. You know, it's very important for our people, no matter what our level of awareness is now, we need to be aware of what has happened to the global environment and how these hurricanes are worse than ever. These disasters are worse than ever. That's the reality. The second thing we have to be aware of, things like the Red Cross are scams. The Red Cross is a scam. The Red Cross is a scam. How do I know? Because I've done relief work over the last 20 years around Hurricane Katrina. I spent a year back and forth the Gulf Coast. I did relief work around Haiti, around Puerto Rico, around the U.S. Virgin Islands. And so we need to definitely, part of this system has had us be disconnected for each other. For everyone that's like us three on this call, many of us are not connected to our people down south or in the West Indies or Africa. We need to know who the local, legit local leaders are ahead of a disaster happening. We need to know what the legit local, legit organizations are ahead of the disasters happening. When Sister Adara mentioned, here's where the work happens in Jamaica, it's because she knows, because she's been there. And what they bank on is all the confusion. And the natural thing is for us to want to give, which is why I immediately put the list out on social media. My people can follow me anywhere on any social media platform. Poet Kevin Powell. There's a list here. Here's the reputable organizations on the ground in Jamaica that people can support, because otherwise your money will get diverted. And what we found with the Red Cross, and this has been documented in the New York Times, that money oftentimes goes to pad the pockets of executives making millions of dollars while people are suffering in these countries, usually countries of color, all around the country, around the world, that have been the victims of centuries of colonialism and enslavement, et cetera, and neocolonialism. Mm-hmm. And so we need to call it what it is. You know what I mean? And I think what is happening in America with Black people, and what's happening in places like Haiti, and I'm so glad you said Cuba and Haiti as well as Jamaica, Mr. Dara, is that Black folks have got to do for themselves. And so as I've been talking to folks via WhatsApp, et cetera, in Jamaica, yep, we're trying to get money down there and people need houses and the government's trying to figure out how to assess things, because they're going around the country as much as they can to assess what the damages are in different places. And you're right, certain parts were hit worse than others, particularly the western part of Jamaica, Mr. Dara. But I think Black folks, we've got to come together. One of the things that I think about, this is the last thing I'll say, when Katrina happened, this is 20 years ago, I was on a call with about 100 Black folks from all over. And we kept saying, well, why don't we have our own relief agency in place, so when something happens in Black America or the West Indies or Africa, you know, we're ready. And no one bothered to follow up on that. And I think about that now, that we have no choice. In the spirit of Marcus Garvey, we've got to do this for ourselves. Otherwise, we'll constantly be in crisis mode, no matter where it is. And I think that's something that we've got to think about, because this global warming piece is real. So we're going to have stuff hitting us in North Carolina and Jamaica and Grenada again, and different islands and whatnot. But are we going to be prepared for it? That's going to really come from us saying we got to do something proactively to make sure there's something in place for our people that's legit. When something happens, we can take care of our people.
100%. No, it's very, very important, and we don't have it, and we need to work on that. And that is part of African unity, and perhaps we're realizing that more than ever these days. And Kevin, I hope you remember me. I'm Paula Witz Arndt. I know you from way back.
I know who you are.
I haven't seen you
since then. This was amazing.
So yeah, I'm very happy to be on the mic with you.
No, and Brother Tom, this sister Dara is one of the folks who has understood, as long as I've known her, we got to connect the dots between us and the diaspora as Black people. This separation of us, you from the South, you from the West Indies, no, we are all connected. That's Sister Dara. I need to give you your props and your flowers. Thank you for who you are.
But one thing I want to say, Kevin, I think we do have to give people a little bit of credit because over the past 20 years, that those definitions between us and that tribalism has evaporated. As we've traveled, as we've met people, when I first went to Jamaica in 77, Black people would say, well, what are you going here for? And now we know Africa better. We know we've been home. We've to the Caribbean. The unity, the framework is there and we are building it because we don't see different. When I first came in DC, when I first became part of the Caribbean community and I forced myself from the Caribbean community because I needed a country, there was a war between Trinidad and Jamaica and, on the radio, on WPFW, the Trinidadian, host, didn't want to play reggae and vice versa. They didn't want to play soca. Now we see one Caribbean, we see one world. When we see the Olympics and certain things, we are rooting for every Black person. So I think there's more consciousness now. It is, we don't have the banner. Some people are waving that banner, but it's out there. We're more aware of ourselves and the continent of Africa and the whole Caribbean community as well, and the whole diaspora. So it's growing, and I think people are responding. People do have to be careful. You have to go on the internet. You have to ask. I did a fundraising event for Hurricane Gilbert here, and that's when I found out you really have to know where your money is going. We chose a hospital, and we gave our money to that hospital. So you just have to do a little homework. Ask your friends from Jamaica. There are local efforts that are filling barrels and sending things down. So do your homework. And again, I would, kind of caution against, like you mentioned, Red Cross and those type of agencies, but other people you see on social media on the ground doing things. I have one friend, the daughter of Neville Garrett, who was Bob's artist. His daughter is collecting feminine products for women. All types of, this is a horrible time. People don't have running water. So she's collecting wipes and sanitary napkins and all of Tylenol and all the things women need so they can go through this period in dignity. Like that to me is a worthy cause. I gave to that cause because I felt that and I understood that. So you have to do your homework, do your research, but there are many ways to help. There will be many, I think probably fundraising events for quite some time. There's a big, there are telethons that are happening. Shaggy, John Paul, Maxie Priest just did an event in London. I mean, there is a global response. But a Black response, but there's white response. All kinds of countries, all types of countries, European, otherwise, have sent folks, put feet on the ground in Jamaica. So this is inspired. It takes all of us, but we need to be front and center to support our people. This is the worst hurricane ever in Jamaica. Category five. That's never happened. And so this is a sign of things to come. So, and again, we don't even know what happened in Cuba and Haiti. I do not know the details and the devastation and how you support that as well. It's a struggle. It has to make us think of what else we have to do to be organized, to be ready to follow in the footsteps of Marcus Garvey and take care of our own.
Let me ask
if you could look up your posts where you listed someone. I want to be able to say them to people right now. And while you're saying this, let me say this real quick. You talked about the togetherness and how we have to come together as people. And there's this faction that has been bothering me for a very long time, and it's the ADOS crowd. The crowd that,
right.
I mean, and they're like, and there's this word they keep using because they, but anytime there's somebody from the Caribbean, they use a tether. That's what they keep saying. Oh, well, they're a tether. And I was like, what is that? That sounds like something else that, are you a government plant trying to further divide us? And I mean, we're from the Caribbean. You're from that. You think that means that we're not going to be treated the same way here in this country because we're from different, and it's such a, I just started hearing it a lot during these last elections. You heard about Kamala Harris. Oh, she's not ADOS. She's not this. Her family's from Jamaica. I was like, well, you know that she's still Black, right? That whole dynamic, and you had that discussion. We are all, when we step out, We are black, no matter where we are from. And that should be the common thread that has us all support each other, whether you're from Haiti, whether you're from South Carolina, whether you're from Africa, whether you're from Jamaica, whether you're from Grenada. We are all black people. And that that really bothers me, Brian. I'm not going to spend too much time on that. I just want to throw that out there. But Brother Powell, let us know the reputable places, some of them that you saw, for people to be able to donate to and to be a part of.
Well, I want to shout out my brother, Kwame Dawes, who's actually currently the poet laureate for Jamaica, brother, you know, Brother Dawes, Sister Dara. And yes, so he talked about definitely supporting the Breads Foundation down at BREDS, Breads Foundation. People can Google it. And I recommend them, certainly recommend, I'm looking at my face, my Instagram post right now. Food for the Poor Jamaica has come up a lot, and I've vetted them as well. So I want to shout out those two. And to this, in the spirit of what y'all just said, you know, Sister Dara, you're absolutely right, because I remember a time when black folks would frown on folks with dreadlocks, you know, natural hair. I mean, when black folks would diss folks, you know, we would go, I remember when African Americans and West Indians were fighting each other in New York City. And man, you got black folks in New York City who are African American and Jamaican, African American Grenadian, African American Puerto Rican. I mean, we are overlapping in so many different ways. My family's from South Carolina. And one of the things that I realized in there as I was doing my deep dive about my family history, man, it was so much back and forth during our enslavement between the Carolinas and the West Indies. And so it's absolutely, definitely divide and conquer, Brother Thomas, is intentional. And we should be suspicious of any organization or any so-called leaders, you know, manufactured leadership, Dr. King called it, that would actually pit people against each other. There's no hip hop without African Americans and West Indians and Latinx folks together creating hip hop, the dominant youth culture on the planet for over 50 years at this point. And so is anyone who talks opposite of that, we can't support that, because that's opposite of Marcus Garvey. That's opposite of Malcolm X was Grenadian and African-American. His father was from Georgia. His mother's Grenada. I mean, yo, you know what I'm saying? Yo. So we need
to also mention, reggae from Jamaica and certain artists who have pushed roots and consciousness have pushed the concept of our unity. And this is, I refer to myself as an African born in America, because sometimes the term black gets a little confused. We are blacks who have been Africans who have been scattered all over the world. And when I go to Brazil, as much as I go to Jamaica, I've kind of grounded there. It's the same. It's you. It's your people. They're not just your relatives. This is you. This is who you are. You go there to find yourself. And, you know, our problems, our heritage, our culture, our stories, our history is the same. And I think we are realizing this more and more. We are breaking those barriers. Those are the barriers of colonialism, and there's the barrier of colorism and all those things. That's we are breaking down those walls. And, you know, it isn't always celebrated, but we are coming together. People are moving home. People move to the Caribbean and become part of that culture. Again, I've adopted myself to Jamaica. You can't tell me I'm not Jamaican. Okay. Wasn't born there, but I feel the spirit of the Jamaican people through Garvey, through the Rasta movement, through the Pan-African consciousness. It became a beautiful home for me. And I traveled all over Jamaica. I used to live in the hills in Potosi with Mita and his family. And it's so beautiful to go to a country that is black. You know, we don't have that here. We don't have that here. Go ahead.
And I feel the same way, because like as you're talking, I'm an 18-year-old college student. I didn't know anything about anything black, nothing. My two best friends were Trinidadian and Barbadian. So I started to learn Muta Maruka, I study, Still Pulse, I study, Bob Marley, I study. That was part of my education, in addition to the last poets or you know, stuff from America. And it's all together. And like, you know, Sister Dara, thank you, is all I gotta say. Thank you, and thank you, and thank you.
Yeah. 100%. And let me say, you know, I feel the same way. My grandmother was born in Grenada, but you can't tell me that. I mean, my kids, my daughter Imani, I'm so proud of her. She's head of the Caribbean Association at her high school.
That's right. That's right.
You know what I mean? That's because that's her inside of her. And all right, don't get me started. All right, so let me go emotional. I'm all live on camera. All right, so one more organization I want to shout out is called Light Her Way JA. Light Her Way JA. And they're doing these solar backpacks, because as you mentioned, a lot of people on the west side that don't have electricity and don't have anything still now, and these solar backpacks that are helping them out. So there's a lot of people who are doing great stuff. We ran out of time, but I just want to say much respect to both of you for all the work that you're doing. Brother Powell, the documentary looks amazing, and I really mean that. I want to set up something here with you in the DMV when it's time to do that. And Ms. Dara, you know how I feel about you. Much respect to you, and let's combine and keep on connecting with these different organizations where we could bring some, you know, I have different athlete friends, different celebrity people to bring and lend their voices and lend their celebrity to. And that's really important. But I know Mike's giving me the signal, so I got to wrap it up. My apologies. But listen, much respect to y'all. Let's keep connecting. Maybe we got to have both of y'all back on the show again just to keep talking about this, because it's important that people really understand. So much respect to you. Thanks again for coming on The Collision with Sports and Politics Collide. I'll be putting this out on social media so we can really keep spreading the word to people who wasn't listening live on air. And everybody have a good one. All right?
One love, one heart.
Peace. Peace.
Then up came a one that said, Hatred, flying at the threat and smile. You're in Jamaica. Come on and
this is Lawrence Ham, chairman of the People's Organization for Progress. I invite you to join the Free Mumia Movement and allies on our long walk for justice for Mumia Abu-Jamal and for the dignity and medical needs of the incarcerated. We are walking 103 miles from Germantown, Philadelphia, to the State Correctional Institution in Frackville, starting November 28th, and arriving 12 days later at SCI Mahanoy. We demand an end to elder abuse, an end to systematic medical neglect, freedom for all political prisoners, and we march to demand freedom for Mumia Abu-Jamal now. MarchForMumia.org for details. Again, that's MarchForMumia.org.
With love, not fear.
Thursday, November 28th, WPFW honors the National Day of Mourning, commemorates the birthday of Jimi Hendrix, and offers music centering gratitude from 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. Bushmeat opens the day with a birthday tribute to Jimi Hendrix. At noon, WPFW takes you once again live to the annual United American Indians of New England rally in Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts. Finally, James Funk offers music filled with gratitude from 3 until 7 p.m. That's all here on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlist, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justice, wherever you are.
This is a special invitation, a call for entries to We the 92%, an anthology of Black women's documenting this time. Your essays, poetry, prayers of resistance, open letters, and more, preserving our voices, our truths, and our testimony in a time when our history is being rewritten, challenged, and erased, are being accepted. Submission deadline is midnight, December 20th. Details at wethe92.com.
Thank you, family, for standing with WPFW during our fall drive. Because of your support, we shared powerful moments. The No Kings protest, the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March, and a moving all-day broadcast on the struggles in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Listeners in the Congo downloaded our radio app, tuned in, and sent us messages of gratitude. proof that your generosity connects people around the world. We came within $30,000 of our goal. If you are able, please help us close the gap and keep WPFW strong. Go to our website at wpfwfm.org, where you can donate or get our P.O. Box number of where to send checks. WPFW, Jazz and Justice, people-powered radio, connecting our communities globally while building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Welcome to The Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
At 89.3 FM, this is member-supported WPFW, Washington.